Hello and welcome to the 12th episode of the Every Mother Knows podcast. This is Angela Fusaro, and in this episode I speak with Akanksha Lomo, University Lecturer at the University of Amsterdam and researcher in the area of diversity and inclusion with a focus on gender roles. Akanksha shares her journey within academia and her current research project on the topic of trust and the connection that this topic has with gender roles and leadership at the workplace. Thank you, Akanksha, for being here today. We're going to talk about a very interesting topic that you're working on at the moment as part of your research project. It's a topic of leadership, gender roles, and trust in today's society and workplaces. But before we get into that, of course, I'm also very curious to learn a bit more about your career journey, how you got started on this path, and if you could tell us also a bit more about your current role and position here in the Netherlands.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me here. And I'm happy to talk about my journey. So I started my studies in psychology back in 2011. That was a really long time ago. And that was back in Delhi in India. And I was, you know, at the time I was interested in, you know, how the human behavior works and how society affects that behavior and, you know, the ideas of mental health. So all of these things, all these topics got me into psychology. And then I had some experiences with working in the gender part of psychology, working for an NGO that was involved in, issues with working women and their, you know, economic strength and how to bring that around, women in Delhi. So I think so that kind of got me into the work around or the research around women per se in psychology, in sociology, in economics. So I think I was always looking for something, a career where I would want to include research. I would want to include sort of social activism, because this is an issue that I felt for a very long time, progress of women, and I felt academia was something, was a place, was a space where I could do that. I could have a career and I could also do something more purposeful, more meaningful with my work. So from there, I entered master's, and that was also in social psychology. And again, I met people who were working in these areas that I was interested in. And from there, I was in Delhi for a long time, and then I felt like I wanted to kind of get into a different, a different system of work. I wanted to learn new skills. I wanted to meet people from different, systems in academia, in research, people with different experiences. So I was looking outside then. And that's when I was lucky that I got in touch with a professor in Switzerland, and she was very kind to invite me and to offer me an internship. And so that's where my network started to take me where I am today, which is I'm lecturing now in communication sciences, in corporate communication in Amsterdam at the University of Amsterdam. So from that internship, I got in touch with the PhD supervisors that I'm working with today for the last 4 years, and I think that's how my network really got built up. And I got into this area of work that I was really interested in. So that's my journey, really. And the one thing that I really have learned in the past 10 years is that always look out for people who are interested in the kind of work that you're doing, or just have a conversation with you what you're interested in. And I think there's always some opportunities that other people know about that you wouldn't know about. And then it just kind of keeps rolling from there. Absolutely. I think that's really been my journey. Yeah.
Wow, amazing. And did you also study or work in Dublin in Ireland before moving to the Netherlands?
Yes. So my PhD program was based in Dublin. So I worked there for 4 years, and then my partner was based in Amsterdam, and so I was always in and out of Amsterdam, and I thought, well, this has a really good academic system, and there's a lot of international people who come here and conduct research, and international students. So I got in touch with an old friend. She works at UvA at University of Amsterdam, and then she told me, well, there are opportunities of lecturing of education in the department, and I applied for it, and that's how from Dublin I got to Amsterdam, the Netherlands.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing journey. I think it's interesting indeed what you shared about using your network and really expanding it and trying to also ask for help on your next transitions. It's amazing to see that this is also applicable in academia, of course. So it's not just something that professionals can do when they are targeting commercial organizations or private companies, but it is actually a very useful strategy to implement within academia as well.
Absolutely. And now that I look back, all my gigs in by either be it in industry or in academia have been through getting connected with the people who work with me. And I think that's something I absolutely cherish and find it precious that works, really. Yes. Works.
Yeah, the power of a connection, of course, establishing a contact with somebody and really making also use of the resources so that we have close to us, available to us. Absolutely. Okay. And what do you enjoy most about working in academia? And also maybe what has been the most the most challenging part for you so far?
So academia it can be a roller coaster, but that's also true for a lot of other careers. But especially in academia, there's the good part, which is, you know, you have a lot of autonomy, you have a lot of freedom with your time, the flexibility, with your time, and you can job craft, you can make your job as you want it to be. But that also means that puts a lot of responsibility on the individual with, you know, how they want to use their time, where they want to invest their time, the kind of skills they want to get into, the kind of people they want to connect to. So while it's a very, very, it's very empowering to have that kind of freedom, but it's for a young researcher like me, it was very daunting. It was very scary to kind of take all that responsibility in trying to manage my time and freedom of work. So I think that was the most enjoyable part, and also a part that it took me time to get used to. But I think with academia, you get to meet people who are working on very diverse things. And so somebody might be working on issues around working women, somebody would be working on issues which are completely different. They're working in the economics of startups, and so when you're sitting at lunch, you have people who are experts in different areas, and they can talk about these very interesting topics. And so I think that's something that I find absolutely enriching in academia. And I think if I could think of the struggle that was mainly present in my PhD, and that's very popular. Actually, that's an issue that has gained a lot of attention in the past few years. Is that you work alone a lot of the times when you're working in academia. You work with your own self. You're working on your own very specific topics, and that kind of creates loneliness, because you're working for long hours in your office, and your topic is very specific, so there's not much similarity with your colleagues, and so that you could work as a team on that topic. And so it kind of creates that space where you're feeling that you're on your own, your resources are limited. And I think that's a very challenging thing when you're working in academia. So,
and how did you tackle that? How did you go about that?
Well, So one of the ways that I first of all, trying to find a community, and I think that's something, because I was feeling that kind of loneliness, and because I had moved countries from Delhi, from India to Dublin, a whole different environment, a whole different culture. So I was very, very, very active in trying to find people, you know, not even in academia, but you know, in other spaces of work, you know, in industry. And I was always, you know, I was always happy to get a cup of coffee with people, and you know, so I think just putting myself out there was helpful to kind of help with the feeling of loneliness. But at some points it used to get a lot, and then there was resources from the school that I was in, where you know, you could go to the counselor, or you could talk to your manager, your supervisors about it, and they could help you with some resources, with some colleagues that could help you with peer support. So I think it was a struggle, but then at times there were also resources that was, you know, if you seeked for them, they would come to you. But that's always important to be aware of, that there's always resources that you can get to. So,
Yes, for sure. And also, of course, expressing your needs during that time, during that challenge, allows you to really understand which resources are available, are out there, and how to make use of those. To make your work and also your performance, I mean, and your time in academia more pleasant and successful and productive at the same time.
Absolutely. Yes. And it's, again, the idea, and from what I remember now, and I think that's an advice that I would always give to young researchers now, is that reach out when you're feeling that you're not, you know, that it's not working out. Or, you know, this is that I'm not able to support myself as much as I'd like to. I think just reach out to the resources, reach out to your managers, and there's always some help that's available.
Exactly. And also normalizing that situation, because it is part of the work somehow. I mean, the work that researchers do is probably for a good percentage very independent, and can really feel lonely, and can really create that loneliness. So I think also making it normal to express certain needs for a better connection, and then really sharing also these as a challenge, seeing it as a common challenge also from a specific target group, from researchers, can be useful, because then it's also easier to talk about it and to find the right resources out there.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yes. And when we talk about your current research project, could you just tell us a bit more about that? Like what the project, what the research is focusing on, and also maybe some of the initial outcomes and findings that you already had.
Yeah, so my present research, which has been going on for 4 years now, so it's around understanding the role of trust, the role of trust at workplace, and how that interacts with the gender role of leaders, and what that means for, you know, how leaders succeed in these positions, or how they progress in their positions, and how they sustain themselves in that positions, in that position. So it was an intersection of understanding trust and gender roles at workplace. So there's a lot of research around how trust is very, very important when it comes to getting hired, you know, and getting hired in positions of responsibility, positions of decision making. So because I was working in gender roles for my internship, and that's the kind of you know, area that I was I was reading around, and I was exposed to, and that's the kind of colleagues I was working in. So the idea was that how gender roles, where you expect women to be, you know, very kind and warm and nice, and you expect men to be very agentic, very, very competent. And when you have these gender roles, when you perceive leaders through those gender roles, how that affects trust you put in them. And there are different kinds of, you know, attributes that we look in when we look at people to trust them. So there is attribute of competence. There's the attribute of benevolence, the caring part. The caringness of a person, and the attribute of integrity, the attribute of fairness. So I wanted to see how we perceive women leaders, female leaders differently when we're attributing these trustworthiness traits in them. So I went on to that, do that research, and what we hypothesized that women will be trusted for their, you know, kind nature, for their nurturing nature, and not so much for their competence, not so much for the ability that they have for their work. And for men, for male leaders, we had hypothesized that they will be trusted more for their competence and not so much for their, you know, kind nature or their fair nature. So surprisingly, and it's good news that women were trusted as much as men for positions of power, for positions of leadership, and that's absolutely great that things are moving in a good direction. And so they were trusted. They are as competent as men to be in these positions of, you know, these masculine, traditionally masculine leadership positions. And they were the interesting part is that they were trusted to be higher on benevolence and integrity more than the male leaders. So they were as competent as male leaders, but they were higher in the good part, the niceness, and that they were perceived to be higher on fairness, on the justness of you know, of a leader.
Is it something like that? Women are more trusted as leaders when next to competences, next to skills. So they also have like that caring and kind and warm attitude. Is that highlight from your research? Oh, wow.
Yeah. And absolutely. And we had not assumed that the competence, the ability part will come in, because according to the gender roles, you would only trust women because they're nice. And not so much that they're competent, and so that's the kind of stuff that came up. But when I was looking at a more detailed lens, we saw that this finding that women are trusted more for their niceness, for their nurturing part, was more pronounced when the trust was coming from male subordinates, male employees. So when male employees were trusting their female bosses, they were trusting them much more on benevolence and integrity. So, you know, the feminine parts, the feminine nature. And that was not true when they were trusting their male bosses. And so this is something that's again coming. I mean, that's something I'm researching now in my follow-up studies, that what's happening between male employees and female bosses, that male employees are you know, trusting female bosses more, and they're more vulnerable to female bosses, or they're more ready to be vulnerable to female bosses versus male bosses. So I think this is an interesting finding. It is something that we are digging deeper. Yes, the relationship that employees share.
Very interesting. Yeah. And how long does usually a research like this one last for? Like, how long is the project for eventually?
So the project is for 4 years. But with research, things can get, you know, there's always a plan, but things can go over time, like it did for me, because, you know, some sort of findings came up and then there were follow-up studies. So then obviously we wrap up maybe within 6 months and maximum 1 year. And then we call it for that project. Yeah.
Yes. And are you following like a global scope? Does it have a global scope as a project?
So yes, absolutely. So the data has been collected globally, but I have to be honest that a lot of data is coming from Western countries like the UK, Ireland, the US, mostly English speaking, where people are more likely to speak English, because a lot of my material, my questionnaires, my research material is in English. So a lot of the data is coming from there. But yes, I have also participants from different countries who are, speaking English. Yeah.
Yes. And how many researchers, how many colleagues are working on this research?
So we're three people, and I'm the PhD candidate in this, and then I have two academics who are working on this, and they're both based in Dublin.
Yes, wow, very interesting. As you know, we focus a lot on motherhood here at Every Mother Knows. Also, we are here to support women on one of the most critical transitions in a person's life, having children, maybe also taking a step back from work and then returning to the workforce after an extended parental break. Does your current research touch on this topic of motherhood at all? Did you see any trends or patterns, or do you have any findings which focus more on also how mothers are maybe perceived at the workplace?
Motherhood is not, an element that we touched on in our project, from my literature research, because that's where we start from usually when we collect data, that we see what's behind in the literature that's exists in the area. I saw that there's a lot of studies that talk about how motherhood is an important element in perceiving how suitable women are to work in the organizations, or how suitable or how valuable they are in the job market. So there are studies that provide evidence that there's a penalty of potential motherhood for women who are in the age of childbearing, and they go for getting hired or they are in employment process. And it is seen that when they're in that age of childbearing and there is a chance of potential motherhood, the employers are likely to give them a temporary contract or to give them projects that are not going to be crucial in their progress and career. And then there are studies that show that when motherhood is, when a woman has a mother status, they're considered that they're going to be less committed or they're going to be less agentic or less competitive to work in organizations. So there's all these studies that question that the idea of an ideal worker that's supposed to work day in and day out and being completely committed in the organization, a very toxic idea indeed. And then there is the idea of mother, who is supposed to be more involved with their family and with children, and these two don't go together. And so there's this kind of struggle that women go through when they do end up going after a career break, or maybe after their maternity leave, being mothers, and they go, and there are already so many practical problems that they go through, but then there's an attachment of problems of perception that come with them being mothers and also them being workers. So but that's a very interesting perspective to take in my research, and probably if I continue with this line of research, which I think I will, absolutely motherhood is something that I'm going to be looking at. There's a lot of interesting and very useful things there might be waiting.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, of course, these days we have also really reconciled finally work and life, especially probably after the pandemic. you know, we are more used also to really combine those two elements that, you know, are part of life, just like caring maybe for not just for children, but maybe also for elderly parents, and focusing also on work, on performance, on productivity. So I'm also wondering if recently there have been some changes, because of course, here, at Everybody Knows, we are really on a mission also to help employers remove those barriers for those women, and to also create more opportunities for mutual growth. And it's interesting indeed to see maybe how things are slightly improving and changing these days. There have been a lot of campaigns also here in the Netherlands about supporting also pregnant women, yeah, on landing their next job, on getting promoted, on deserving and getting the same salary as their male counterpart. So yeah, I see a lot of changes, of course, in that space. Still, I think there is a long way to go, but it would be interesting also then to see, you know, some more maybe recent studies and kind of situations also based on the recent changes due to the pandemic as well.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I think that's especially when I'm thinking about my own research, and I'm thinking that trust has so much to do with you know, your status as parents, and there's again research about you know, when you become parents and you come to workplace, how that trust really affects you, or how that trust changes towards you, because now you're this more responsible person, you know.
Yes.
You're taking care of lives now, and you're coming into work, but your responsibilities or your priorities kind of change. So I think that kind of I don't know if it's a struggle or if it's a change of perceptions or negotiations, that would be quite interesting to look at, actually. Yeah.
Absolutely. And of course, we are all biased. I mean, we wear different lenses to look at the world and the reality around us. In your opinion, how can we deal better with our own biases? And maybe how can we also use those biases that we have to drive more diversity, more inclusion around us in our choices, at our workplaces, for example?
Of course, like you said, we all have our own assumptions about, you know, about things, about people, about places, and how coming from a different culture and settling into a completely different, society, culture, I realized that it really starts with a very simple exercise of reflection about what kind of assumptions that you hold about people who are different from you. And I had to do that myself when I was you know, trying to kind of assimilate into a different set of group or people who are different from me. So it's a reflection of, you know, your own beliefs, your own attitudes, assumptions that we have about people who we usually, you know, they're not part of our friends group, they're not part of a family, they're not even part of our own culture, shared cultural system. So be honest about that reflection and see where you could be going without evidence. There might be some beliefs and attitudes that we might be holding that really doesn't have an evidence base. So why keep having it? Why keep holding it so tightly? And then I think a second part would be to go to events or to go to meetups or chats where you can be around people who are different. And that's because it's very easy to kind of get into that comfort zone, you know, to talk to people we've always talk about the things we've always talked about. It's very comforting. It protects us. It protects our, you know, our beliefs and ideas. But once in a while, it's really important that you challenge yourself, that we challenge ourselves to kind of go and talk to someone who probably doesn't look like us, who probably, you know, doesn't work in the same space that we work in, or doesn't always speak the kind of language that we speak. And that kind of creates a sense of vulnerability for the people involved in that space. So it's a vulnerability on your part, and it's a vulnerability on the part of the other person. And I think in that shared vulnerability, you kind of connect with people on you know, a more genuine level. And I think in that, exposing yourself to these opportunities of different ideas and diversity, you start questioning the beliefs that you held for so long, as part of our socialization, as part of our cultural beliefs, and you start questioning them. And I think that's very much the beginning of really starting to break it all apart and bring in new stimulus and new opportunities to interact with the rest of the world, I suppose. And then I think it also kind of creates, and for people who are, for people who come from different places or who feel that they're, that they're not well represented in organizations, in places, they feel more comfortable and they feel more included when you kind of create that kind of environment, of talking about their experiences or talking about more authentic, things that matter to the both of you. So I think that again, so you're appreciating diversity, you're appreciating diverse ideas, and you're also making people feel involved and included. So I think that's how I would go about it.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I think you said it really beautifully. And indeed, it takes practice and some courage. It takes us also to step out and really kind of get out of our comfort zone and become vulnerable to really find that connection with somebody else, especially with somebody who might not look like us, who might be different from us at first glance. And you never know, because maybe later on, as you are in a conversation, those people could actually be even more similar to us than we thought initially. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's the surprising, the most rewarding part, that people who probably came from very different places, who probably came from very different, cultural systems. And then you realize that there are very similar things that make us kind of connected. We have very similar insecurities. We have very similar aspirations. And I think then it really is rewarding to be that vulnerable. And absolutely.
Yes, yes. At the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned your career journey, and you mentioned that you decided also on this path, on the path that you are on at the moment, because you also wanted to make an impact in the society. And sometimes, of course, people imagine academia as a place which is a bit like detached and a bit further away from the real life and the real problems. But we know it's not like that eventually. And there are a lot of initiatives that have also a very practical side coming from the academia. In your view, what are some of the actions or initiatives that employers, that companies can really take to support the leadership and the growth of women within their organizations?
Like you said, academia can provide something which is a bit more practical. And I was part of this project back in the university where they were assessing issues around gender representation and diversity representation in different departments and the management board of different departments. And I think during my experience of working in that project, I realized that the first step of any employer or any organization in this direction is to have a real assessment of what really is working and what really is lacking. Because there's data out there, there's so much around out there, and there's so much of, I think, popular material out there which really isn't backed sometimes by real evidence, or the evidence that kind of matters to you, to your context. So I think taking a realistic assessment as to how women in your organization, or how people underrepresented people doing in your organization in terms of pay equity, in terms of you know, their work-life balance in terms of how they're feeling about their professional growth and development and the kind of barriers they are they're experiencing to their leadership aspirations. So I think when you have this asset, when you know the management or tries to assess this in the organization, that's very much the first step. And identifying these issues kind of helps also to make a realistic plan as to the kind of resources that are already there in the organization, and that you just need to kind of, activate those resources that are already in the organization, or maybe there are other resources that need to be brought in to address those issues that came up in the assessment. So then that would be the first initiative, is to make that assessment. And then there's obviously plans. The plans to address these issues could include, you know, mentorship programs and, you know, actively putting the message out there that it's important for the organization that women are represented in decision making, that women are represented in decision making at all levels and not just the mid level, you know. And so, and this message needs to come from leadership, from management, because there is evidence that when the communication comes from leadership or management, it has a larger impact in setting up the tone. And then, of course, there is trainings on awareness of biases, on maternal bias, on you know, likability bias that women have to go through at workplace. So I think awareness is super important again, because a lot of times we kind of engage in behavior, or we engage in practices that we really don't, we're not aware that this might be creating problems for a certain set of people, and that's absolutely fine. But it's the job of training, of awareness that, well, this is creating problems on this side, and there are ways to improve on it. And I think yes, that kind of system really would help. And I think something that I found myself very, very useful is to create community where within organizations, within within offices, where there are female employees members of underrepresented communities who can come together, and more experienced employees can kind of mentor or share their expertise, their resources to the more younger or the less experienced employees who would like to talk about perhaps how to handle, manage motherhood with work, or to talk about how to get ahead in networking, or be it, you know, professional growth. So I think community is something that needs to always be emphasized and given resources for, because it absolutely helps so much to get women to share their experiences. And then it's fulfilling for both younger inexperienced employees and also more experienced employees, and it kind of fulfills both of their purposes. I think communities are absolutely important.
Yes, and I think talking about communities and talking about role models, we have a nice connection actually to my last question for you, which is really about role models. Did you have, or do you have, a role model these days, somebody that you admire, and why is this person maybe a model to you?
Right. So, this question can be quite difficult to think about, because, you know, you meet so many people during your career, during your life, and then to reflect on something that they inspired you to do. And I think for me, it has been a lot of women throughout my journey that have inspired me, or that I've admired and kind of taken bits and pieces of how they have, managed their life, managed their work life. And it could be the very resilient aunts And, you know, mums and mother-in-laws that I've met back in India who are, you know, they don't have the work life that we traditionally know of, but, you know, they absolutely manage finances and their home and their families and relationships with so much grace and so much intelligence and so much resilience, that I kind of bring that, that kind of inspiration into my own life when I'm dealing with my own, you know, issues at work or issues with relationships. So I think I find that a lot of women that I met during, you know, my university time back in India, the kind of resilience that they bring, because you know, there's, I mean, as you know that, you know, you work with women, working women, there's so many pressures, their familiar pressures, their pressures on career that women have to kind of juggle or negotiate all the time. And I think the kind of intelligence and the grace it takes to still perform as well in workplace and then at, you know, in their own personal lives is absolutely, you know, it's, I don't even have words how great that is. So I think I take inspiration from all the women that I work with, and yeah, I hope that that I can have skills and these really important qualities that they have that I can include in my own life and then, you know, get ahead from there.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing this with us and also for taking us through your research project, for telling us about your own journey and also how you took the step that made you come to the Netherlands. It was really a pleasure to be having this podcast episode with you today, and I hope to speak to you soon. Thank you so much for all the inspiration and insights.
Thank you so much, Angela. It was a pleasure talking. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you found it interesting. If you think it would resonate with someone you know, please share it with them or on social media. And for more about what we do, you can visit my website at everymotherknows.org. See you next month.